All right, folks, we hope you have enjoyed your break time. One of the features of Together for the Gospel that has made this conference something unique is the panel discussions we have after the plenary presentation. So even though this one's going to be a bit abbreviated, we're going to have the opportunity to talk to Dr. Dever about his presentation, and we'll also have the opportunity to talk a bit about Dr. Sproul's words to us as well. So if you'll go ahead and find a place, we're going to get started. You know, Mark, I've known you for going on 30 years.
Yeah.
And from the very beginning, our conversations have been largely about what you talked about today.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to say the passions that were reflected and everything you had to say today in your talk are really the passions that have defined you as long as I've known you. So let me ask you a question with that as background. If you're looking over your life as pastor, to what degree do you think what you said today would be different than what you would have said as you were imagining being a pastor?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think 15 years or 16 years of pastoring the same congregation has given me a lot of illustrations, has reinforced the truth of it. I don't know that my basic understanding of it has changed. It's just become a lot more real. I would have said those words 15 years ago, but now when I say them, I have stories like some of them that I shared and other stories up there. One that I've thought about using, but that I'll burn up some of our panel time now on, was the story of Bill, a friend of mine who teaches at the university, who teaches psychology. And he was fairly secular, and he came to the church, and it was actually through watching the relationships in the church that he began to be convicted of the reality of Christianity, and after attending for about a year, decided to follow Christ himself, repent of his sins, be baptized. And he would say it was the witness of the church, which is, you know, he'd be one of the most unlikely people. He teaches a conspiracy in groupthink, or rather a course in groupthink, a course in conspiracy theories, and yet here's this man at a major university converted by the grace of God through the witness of a local church. So I think a lot of experiences like that have probably just made me more certain and confident of its importance. And honestly, the fact that I don't hear anybody talking about it just makes me feel like, I feel like a, you know, broken wheel or squeaky wheel or something, but I have to just keep talking about this.
I want to make an observation, though, having known you for all these years. And
is this going to be about weight loss?
No. This is that's an apt observation, just not the one that was my interest at the moment. I'm more interested in what I think you've gained rather than lost in this.
Well done.
Over the last several years, say over that period of time, I think I've noted something that I sense might be helpful to the folks in this room, and that is that you're just a lot sweeter than you used to be talking about this. Mm. And I mean that in a very sincere and loving way. Your principial observations are exactly the same, but one of the things I love about hearing you talk is you talk about the people you've come so much to love who are the people you get to serve as pastor. And I just have to tell you, as a friend, that's just something that's incredibly sweet just to hear.
I appreciate that, Al. I think you endured a lot of self-righteousness from me as a godly man and a forgiving brother, and I think a lot of people have. And by God's grace, I think there may be less of that now than there was 15 or 20 years ago. I don't think the Lord's at all done, but I'm thankful for whatever.
But that isn't really what I meant. I understand that, and there's a very, very kind way to put it. I just really rejoice, and my heart is made glad when I hear you talk about your people. And that's what you would hope for from a pastor. And I would especially hope a lot of these younger pastors would recognize, boy, it really can be that good.
Yeah.
I think that's really sweet. When you hear this kind of language, let's say to Lig and CJ and Thabiti, when you hear this kind of language about the church, do you think this is what most pastors end up talking about when they talk about being pastors? I look at the conferences, I read the magazines, I look at the books in the pastor's help section in the Christian bookstore after you finally find a book. And it just doesn't appear to be much about this.
So is this what most pastors are talking about in the context of pastors' conferences?
Yes.
No.
And not in your circles? And okay. So why? Why is it that this is not the kind of language that you hear from most pastors talking about pastoring?
Seems like part of it is got to be that, unfortunately, so few of us experience what was just described here. As I listened to Mark unpack, using very familiar outline for the gospel, God, man, Christ response, put flesh on that outline in terms of the life of the local church and hold that up. I mean, my heart just kept going, oh. And I think while there's that hunger pain, that starvation, there's so many Christians and so many pastors who've not been in a place like that, who've not been with a people like that. Yeah. And so we say church, and we mean something much smaller, and we give our attention to other things because of that.
Don't you think, too, that this is not quick payoff? This is long-term payoff. It's easier to talk about getting people into seats in your local gathering than it is talking about sinners becoming repentant sinners who become saints. It takes you a long time to get where Mark is talking about getting. It's easier to tell people about things that are easier to do than it is to tell people you're going to have to wait and work and pray and hope, and it's going to be a long haul.
You know, there were several points you made, Mark, that I thought were poignant and pointed and eminently quotable, but I thought where you ended was especially helpful, where you said the church is evangelism. You know, Christ's method of evangelism is the church. And that is something that is so missing from so many who see the church as the result of evangelism rather than the church as the means of evangelism.
Yeah. One of the things I want to say, CJ, that I've appreciated about Sovereign Grace churches is I think a lot of Sovereign Grace pastors do talk about their experience in their church like that. I think a lot of them do have that kind of sweet experience. And I think that whenever I can find a church that people are happy to be in, it just helps in preaching the gospel.
Yes.
You know, because then it makes it apparent how the Christian life is happy. And it's obvious you can invite people to know Christ. It's just a thing that's clearly good for them.
Yeah. Well, Al's question was about pastors' conferences and whether this is an emphasis of pastors' conference. So my answer would be still, from my experience, no. I think what is often accented at pastors' conferences, and appropriate so, is the priority of preaching. What you were talking about was building a church. So preaching as a means of building the church. And there must be an accent on application in preaching if one is going to build the church in the way you described.
CJ, I want to ask you, shifting briefly here as we have time, to R.C.'s address. Did you agree with his interpretation of the basic distinction between Hegel and Kierkegaard?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the way he characterized analytic philosophy.
Yeah.
I was curious.
Two-thirds of the way through, I turned and said, I have no idea what he's talking about. Absolutely not a clue. So would you guys like anything from Starbucks? I mean, I could do something productive right now and model the effect of the gospel by serving. I've got nothing to say about
really,
the first two-thirds
really
of his
is,
message.
Yeah. It really is important, but I have to say, halfway through some of that, I thought, you know, some people in this room are going, that's fascinating.
And other people in this room are going, I think that's supposed to be fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. And other people are just thinking I'm stupid.
Well, no. But it reminds me what a gift R.C. has been to the church for 50 years, teaching stuff and putting it in front of an evangelical audience and readership and listenership who otherwise would never hear those names and think those thoughts and have those kind of critical observations about the world producing kind of worldview producing movements of the age that he has tracked so carefully. Yes. And I just have to say, what we got today was vintage R.C. Sproul. And it was
really
good
was.
Stuff.
Yep.
Real good stuff.
Really
really was.
Yep. Can we go back to Mark's for just a moment?
Evidently.
Could I ask him a question?
Yes, absolutely.
So, Mark, there must be, in order to build a church as you describe the church, in one's preaching, would you agree or disagree, that there must be some accent on application of the text? Now, I'm assuming great care with precision in relation to the text and the exegesis of the text. But would you agree or disagree that there must be some accent in the sermon on application of the text in order to build a church as you describe?
I would agree that there must be emphasis on application in the text, of the text, in the church, as I'm describing.
All right. Excellent. Let me get really set free here and put my notebook down. Okay, so.
For those of you who are wondering, this settles about 20 years of argument. So that was a classic moment. Treasure it.
So how would you help a pastor who devotes the majority of his time in his preparation to the exegesis of the text, to the neglect of the application of the text?
I would tell him, as your question implies, that he shouldn't neglect the application of the text.
Yeah, helpful. How would you help him more specifically and meaningfully to alter the patterns of his preparation so that his preaching is distinctively different in its accent on application?
Once he is confident of the meaning of the text, then he should spend time in prayer and reflection. And I find talking to other people really helpful. That may just be my personality, but I find talking to other people very helpful to know, okay, if these are the four points I'm bringing out, what is the implication of this point for the non-Christian, for, you know, the mom at home, for somebody at work or in school, for us as a whole congregation, and for the individual Christian? And then do that with each point in the sermon. I find that very useful. It's sort of a structured meditation on each text. And then I won't necessarily put all that in my sermon, but I'll make note of all that, and a lot of it will get in my sermon.
But that's an intentional part of your preparatory process.
Very important.
Is your application grid available at the Nine Marks site somewhere?
It's a couple of places. One, I think it's on the Nine Marks website. Also, Michael Lawrence has a new book, Introduction to Biblical Theology, and part of that is showing how to do it in preaching, and he's got a graph of it in there too, just a grid that you can fill in with the points of your sermons in these various categories. Kind of ripped off from William Perkins' Art of Prophesying and Richard Baxter's Reformed Pastor. I mean, they were talking about categories of hearers, and I just have some modern examples.
In your preparation, proportionally, how much time are you devoting to application?
I don't know, because there are parts of a third, a half?
A third?
A quarter, a third, a half, somewhere in there.
How many hours are you devoting to sermon preparation?
30 hours for sermon, 25 hours for sermon.
25 to 30 hours.
But I'm just preaching one sermon a week. I know a lot of these brothers are preaching more than that. I'm just preaching one a week.
Okay, but of that 25 to 30 hours, how many hours would be devoted?
Well, it's hard to say because application just pops out and I make notes. Okay. 5 to 10 hours of that is what we're on application probably.
Thank you, Al, for letting me ask these questions.
Thank you.
We're co-leading this panel.
Evidently.
I
surrender. The joy of having RC.
Yes.
Is partly for me the joy of having the folks here in this room hear the voice of a man they're more likely to have read than to have heard. And I think that's another reminder to us that there's kind of an incarnational issue of authorship here. It helps to understand what R.C. writes. When you see the joy in his face, you hear the passion in his voice, and you see the full experience there. We wish he could have been here, but I'm very thankful that he was here with us in this way. And the same thing's true of Mark. And when I think of Mark's books, whether it's the Nine Marks book or any of the rest of your books, about this particular issue you spoke about today, this particular challenge, I think it really helps to see you talk about it. To see your eyes kind of darting back and forth while you're thinking and preaching, and just to see what you're doing here. I loved what you said in a very kind of self-deprecating way, but in a very revealing way, you said, this is what I do at Capitol Hill. You said, I talk this way. I think it's important that we kind of go back to that for a minute and say, you know, who we are in the pulpit had better be who we are. Mm-hmm. Because if we try to be someone else in the pulpit or try to be other than who we are, it's just not going to really serve well in terms of preaching and faithfulness in preaching.
Yeah. And I think that's where we can do things in our own preaching that can be appropriate kinds of personal illustrations that we give. So I know that, you know, some of us here will be big fans of Lloyd Jones and Preaching and Preachers and really deprecate any kind of references to ourselves. And that's one of the things that would make us maybe distinct from larger evangelicalism in some ways, at least with some of us. And I think, depending on who you are, you need to hear that or you don't need to hear that. You know, there are some preachers today who make way too much reference to themselves, and they try to build the church almost, it seems, around themselves, which is really unstable and not wise for them or the church. There can be an opposite error of no illustrations and or no reference to the preacher's self. And I do think that is an error. I mean, CJ's been needling me about this for 15 years. I do think, you know, that we do need to, I mean, that is a good, in a good way.
I know you get that. Although I love your ridicule as well.
The fun thing is also when we're together, and especially as I have the opportunity to be in your churches, you are who you are. And I think inevitably we show up that way. We need to pray that the Lord will use that in the right way, and we'll be used in the right way as we think of that kind of aspect of our ministry. But by the grace of God, I just want to tell you, I'm thankful the Lord made every single one of you the way He made you, and I'm glad you show up as that man in the pulpit. But I'm glad in the end of the day, that's not what we talk about. We talk about the message that comes through.
Now, one of my questions I have about this is, are there people out there who are thinking about this? I mean, is this, like when you guys are with your church leaders, is this how they're thinking about the church? In other words, am I only the only one saying this, or do everybody else read this in their Bibles and it's out there and people are talking about it a lot?
I think in a strategic way, you have spoken more directly and comprehensively to this, and indeed more programmatically in one sense. I think one of the ways you have really helped us all is by actually getting from exegesis and a systematic biblical theology down to this is what it actually looks like, and using what the reformers used as the category of marks of the church. You know, in the 16th century, the big issue for the reformers was, where are you going to find the church? What marks are present that indicate here is the church? Those same marks being absent indicate that there is no church. I don't know that many folks have been thinking in those terms for a very long time. And when you show up to say, here are 9 marks of a church, by their presence, there's a church. By their absence, there's something less than the church that is there. Your list of 9 is arbitrary, but deeply biblical. The list could have been 11 or 7, depending on how you wanted to describe them.
That's right.
But 9 seems to have worked. I'd suggest sticking with it.
All right.
I don't know anybody who's read more ecclesiology than you. I don't know seminary students who've read as much ecclesiology as you have your interns read. I don't know anybody that's thought more about ecclesiology and has distilled digestible, helpful material for pastors in living out life in a local congregation. And I don't know anybody that's doing a better job of it at the local church level.
Oh, brother, what I'm desperate to hear is that your church leaders understand this stuff, that they are thinking through this stuff, that this is what they've been learning from the Bible.
There are some. Harry Reeder, a friend of yours, is one who's tried to encourage people in our neck of the woods to think about this for the life of the church. But again, I think you have spawned a lot of the interest that exists out there in the conservative evangelical, even the publications and conferences that are thinking about it. And so I would encourage you to just stay on this.
Sure. Just a quick question. Yeah. You're talking about the church today in a way that I think for many of us creates longing.
Mm-hmm.
Desire.
Yeah.
And as pastors, we're listening and we're gripped by that, and we're thinking, yeah, we want our people to drink from this fountain too. So in addition to preaching, which is primary, how else are you transferring that longing, that desire, that vision, that taste to your people? Or how else would you instruct us as pastors to make application, as CJ is saying, in various ways?
Yeah, the only thing I think to say briefly is our Sunday evening service is a prayer meeting, and we take time for people to share things that I've approved if I'm leading the service beforehand. And when I hear little tidbits of good examples of this, I want it shared with the church as a whole. So Philip Van Steenberg the other day, we had a couple of good evangelistic encounters. He did very simple things to help encourage those encounters, so I asked him if he would share that just 2 minutes. On a Sunday night.
Excellent.
So lots of little examples of God's grace in our life like that. Just sharing that helps the church become more self-conscious about that and do those things more and enjoy them.
We want to thank you for joining us in this conversation and hope you'll continue similar conversations over dinner until we gather together for the evening session. Dr. Dever, you've got some announcements to make, I believe.